This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, our top news, legislators are debating a teacher pay raise in Austin. We'll also hear about a bill banning red light cameras that's on the march. And we'll check in down in Houston and learn about one Texas city with no property taxes. In our interview, we talked to State Rep Kyle Biederman about ways Texas can build the wall ourselves, plus get a little update about efforts to preserve the Alamo. And we'll close with a commentary from Carrie Cheshire. Emanating from the 1836 studios in Austin, Texas, this is Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald. With this week's top story, I've got Brandon Waltons, Capitol Bureau Chief for Texas Scorecard. Let's talk about this. The Lieutenant Governor is pushing a $5,000 pay raise for teachers, and I think listeners may be a little surprised by the response.
Well, that's right, Tony. Governor Abbott made an emergency item in his State of the State address a few weeks back, increasing teacher pay. The Lieutenant Governor in the Senate has a proposal, and they heard it in committee, a $5,000 teacher pay raise across the board, and it was very, very interesting to watch. I mean, you saw teachers versus the administrators sparring over this pay raise.
Yeah, unsurprisingly, the teachers unions, teacher groups, surely they're not going to turn down
right. An
extra $5,000 in salary. So they're there voicing their support. But the administrator groups, the school boards, those types of people in there saying, we're kind of lukewarm on whether we want to pay our teachers more.
Exactly. And while you had teachers and representatives from teachers unions saying, a $5,000 pay raise would be nice, I could certainly put that to use. What you actually saw as well is you had representatives from groups like the Texas Association of School Boards come in and say, well, we're not really in favor of this because we'd rather just have the money and spend it how we would like to spend it, which we know, based on history, probably not going into the classroom.
You need a fifth assistant principal
right. Or
a water park or a stadium or pay some local vendor more, something like that would be the typical trend with things. Very interesting. I guess there is some conservative taxpayer criticism of the bill as well. Obviously, on the one hand, the money goes to the classroom,
sure.
Which would be an improvement, something that conservatives have been calling for. But on the other hand, it's just basically more money for education dumped in there without any changes to the structure, without any reforms.
Well, it's more money, and it's the across-the-board nature as well that has some conservatives criticizing this Senate Bill 3, is what it's called. Instead, you also see some merit pay proposals as well. Governor Abbott actually was not very specific in asking exactly for what he wanted. He actually pointed to some programs like Dallas ISD has implemented that reward teachers based on actual performance. But aside from that, it also inputs into the already very complicated funding formula that the state uses to fund the schools, inputs this new $5,000 permanently into that formula that the state is going to have to continually send to schools each year.
Yeah, and so you have that going on. The other criticism from taxpayers is basically, hey, we're supposed to be talking about property tax relief this session, and so far we've seen some small numbers kind of untied to any specifics on that front, but certainly much smaller than the approximately $4 billion we're talking about for teacher pay raises.
Yeah, we're over a third of the way through the legislative session. We still have not actually seen a proposal, at least one championed by the leaders of both chambers, that would actually offer any property tax relief. Meanwhile, from early on, we've had this money set aside for these teacher pay raises. A lot of taxpayers are asking, where's our relief?
Thanks for that report, Brandon. Now let's turn to Destin Sinski, Texas Scorecard's Capitol correspondent, and talk about another bill that's on the march, a ban on red light cameras.
House Bill 1631, Tony, has 102 co-authors in the Texas House. Pretty wild. Authored by Jonathan Sticklin. I think this is an attempt to finally rein in these wildly unpopular red light cameras, these traffic enforcement devices, as they've been referred to. For a long time, people have been saying, these are unconstitutional. We've got to do away with these.
Cities basically, people complain that they have a constitutional right to confront their accuser. And when their accuser is a camera, they're obviously not getting to enjoy their constitutional rights.
Right. So cities and counties, people that implement these things, they say, safety. If we prevent even one car accident, these are totally worth it. But what really happens is these cities abuse them, shorten the length of the lights, to increase the number of violations, kind of give...
It's it's a frustrating, it's a frustrating thing, fine-driven thing. Now, you mentioned 102 co-authors in the Texas House, 150 members of the chamber. So that's more than two-thirds, really significant. And bill being carried by this conservative rabble-rouser, State Rep. Jonathan Stickland.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. So we need 76 votes to get a majority on the House floor, right? But 102 more than does that by a long shot. And the interesting thing here, Tony, is about two-thirds of the people who have signed on are Republicans, and about a third of them, 30-some-odd people who've signed on, are Democrats. So it just shows you how wildly unpopular these are. You know, Governor Abbott coming out very strongly against these in the last campaign cycle. I think, you know, with new speaker and the way that the chamber is set up now in the process, I think, you know, given that he's done so much work already before it's even been referred to a committee, I think this bill has a great shot at making its way to the governor's desk.
Yeah, you were noting that a majority of the Transportation Committee, a majority of the Calendars Committee, which schedules bills for votes on the floor, are on board with this bill. And so really the interesting test that we'll see moving forward is, can a very conservative member of the legislature, like Jonathan Stickland, member of the very conservative Freedom Caucus, can he move a bill through the chamber? Is he going to be allowed to move a bill through the chamber that has such broad support? Because in the past, under past leadership, that wouldn't have been the case.
Yeah, so there are some people in the Capitol from the more moderate establishment, you know, wing of Austin saying, you know, do we really want Jonathan Stickland to get a win on this? And I think the funny thing about it is I don't know that there's anything they can do to prevent it at this point, right?
Yeah, you've got two-thirds who are in favor
of it. Jonathan's worked so hard on this, and he's got the support of, you know, two-thirds of his, you know, colleagues in the House. And so the support behind it politically and in the state of Texas, I think that this is something we finally send to the governor.
Finally, let's turn and head down to the Bayou City and talk to Charles Blaine. You've been writing about a city down there with no property taxes. Tell us about it.
Hey, Tony. Yeah, it's kind of a shocker to me. I was, you know, having coffee with a friend last week, and they just mentioned it, and I didn't believe it. So I had to go and find out myself, and then I came across Stafford, Texas, which, yeah, like you said, they have no property taxes, no city property taxes. And, you know, residents there just loving it. They've seen nothing but a boom ever since they abolished them.
So how did this happen? I mean, most cities have a property tax that they assess in addition to other taxes. How is the city of Stafford able to operate without a property tax?
Yeah, so, well, it's really interesting because the mayor, Leonard Scarsella, has been the mayor for, you know, something like 40 years. And in the early 90s, he decided that he wanted to give a 100% property tax abatement to property owners, commercial and residential, in the city. So they passed this 100% property tax abatement. They're able to do so because they have such a robust sales tax, not sales tax, but just commercial market. They're right off of a major highway, 20 miles outside of Houston. So they have a lot of consumers coming through town, you know, stopping there for lunch, coming by on the weekends. And so they have a really robust sales tax.
Yeah, and so basically you've got this city that looked at it and they said, hey, we've got enough revenue here. We don't need to be imposing this burdensome property tax on people. You know, it's run them out of their homes. We'll do our part and get rid of the property tax. It's really interesting to me because you see so many of these local governments say, oh, well, we can't take action. Or they blame Washington or they blame Austin. Here's an example of a city that has the freedom to do something different, and they've done it successfully for, you know, going on, I guess, now almost 30 years.
Right. And that's the thing, you know, like you said, they often say that they can't do this, they can't do that. But this is one area where they very well can. And in most governments, as we all know, if they had a very robust sales tax, would just continue to get property taxes and increase them every year. But this shows that, you know, with some sound fiscal management, you can really change things. And like I said, their economy has been booming ever since. So it certainly didn't hinder their growth at all.
Well, it's an interesting story, success story there of good governance. City of Stafford, the city with no property taxes. Appreciate your reporting on it, Charles.
Thank you.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score, we think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's great to welcome on the program this week State Representative Kyle Biederman, a Republican from Fredericksburg. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, Tony, you're welcome. It's always a joy to be on the show with you.
So,
get the truth out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I wanted to bring you on. So, Republican elected officials across the board run for office and they say, hey, I'm serious about border security. I'm serious about tackling illegal immigration. They talk a lot about it, but particularly here in the state and at the state level, a lot of them go, yeah, I'm serious about it, but really I'm asking for, you know, Uncle Don to take care of things for me. You know, I want Washington to come in and do the job. I don't want to do anything. And so I wanted to bring you in because you're one guy in Austin who is saying, okay, there are some things we can do here in Texas to tackle this problem, specifically moving some money around from the Rainy Day Fund, the Economic Stabilization Fund, to get some funding for a wall or for other physical border security. And then also wanted to touch on legislation you're passing that would turn off the magnets that draw in illegal immigration. But let's start with the wall funding. This has been something that's been in the news. Tell folks a little bit about what you are proposing and working on this session.
Well, thanks, Tony. You know, we talk about border security. We all campaign on it. But then it's so easy to blame the federal government. And it's the first response you get from people that are weak and don't have the courage to stand up for what our constituents and what the people are looking for. And so they just blame it. Oh, that's a federal issue, so we got to clean our hands. Although Texas has spent almost $4 billion over the last decade on border security, and we really don't have that much to show for it because we still have the broken system. We haven't built a single barrier down there. We've had some planes and some boats, but, you know, it's time for us to spend our money and get an investment back where we could save money in Texas on education, on criminal justice and jails and prisons, in health and human services, and drug trafficking and human trafficking, all the things that we have bills coming out on. But they don't want to touch border security because they say it's a federal issue. Yeah. And that's really sad.
Yeah, you know, people want to address the issue without doing these tangible things. And so you mentioned in the past we've spent money on sending DPS down to the border. Right. And we're still continuing to do that. But a lot of that enforcement, you go and look at what it was. It was like,
catch and release. You know,
well, it was a lot of pull people over for random traffic tickets and hope that maybe there's some illegal aliens in the car or something like that. Well, it was like a huge spike in traffic enforcement down in the Rio Grande Valley area. But that's not, you know, real borders. That's, you know, basically a lot of it's hassling the people who live down in the Rio Grande Valley. So you've actually proposed taking a significant amount of money out of the Economic Stabilization Fund. This is the state's safety security blanket, basically, for our budget. But it's pretty full of cash now. And so taking some of those funds and saying, hey, the president's asking for money for wall funding. Well, we got some money sitting here that we'd like to spend on it.
And plus, it's going to be helping our state. The thing is, you know, it's a one-time expense, which is what we feel is important for the Rainy Day Fund or the ESF Fund, not to have it for ongoing expenses.
Right.
We'll be asking for reimbursement from the federal government. You know darn sure that the federal government would want to help us if we help them. You know, we have to do something first. So people sit back and say, okay, if the federal government will pay us back what we've spent already, then we'll put money into border security. Well, no, sometimes you just got to take action yourself. And that's what Texas is supposed to do, not just sit back. I mean, this is a problem that we are suffering from. So instead of waiting for somebody else to do it, we can do it. The only problem with the ESF funds is it takes a two-thirds vote. So we're also looking at the bill to have a funding source where we're actually having the governor have a fund that can be contributions come from other states, from people, from maybe other agencies here in Texas, or we just need to find a way to be funding this. And we got to get it passed. I mean, that's the important thing. We all know that it's needed. In fact, the governor was on TV yesterday saying that there's an emergency at the border for decades. But then we have all the liberal legislators and representatives and legislators on the border. They're all they're all saying, oh, there's no problem. They're all not telling the truth. And then you have Border Security, you know, Border Patrol, just come saying clearly what's happening on the border, that it's a crisis. So it's just so unfortunate that people don't have the guts to really, you know, stand up for what's really happening at the border. And myself and Representative Kane, we put this bill out. Tony Tinderholt is helping us also. And we also are talking with the White House right now about this bill. So this is a bill in motion. And, you know, with all the things going on in Washington, D.C., right now is a time for Texas to act and to help out and take care of our own, you know, situation at the border.
So logistically, how would this work? I mean, I think people look at border security, illegal immigration issues, and they go, okay, well, you've got to, you know, the federal government has to take care of that. Yeah. But I look at this and I go, well, why can't the state, I mean, we can put up structures elsewhere. We can build a building where we choose. Why can we not put up a barrier at our southern border at what would be illegal border crossing sites? Is there really any impediment to the state taking action on its own?
Well, that's what we're trying to get the, you know, dot the I's and cross the T's on that. And that is going to take cooperation from the federal government to make sure what we can and can't do. What are they already working on? How can we piggyback off of the work they're already doing? And so that's where the coordination comes in. But you're right. We should be able to do some of these things on our own. In fact, our chairman of Homeland Security said, you know, we just need to beef up the ports of entry. Okay, great. So how much money, Commissioner, would you, I mean, committee chair, do you want to put at the port of entry? Well, there is no money there. I mean, they just want to say that's the problem, that's where the money needs to go, but there's no one in Texas really that wants to do anything about it that's in the leadership positions. So we need to put our money where our mouth is. It's time. We've been paying the price too long and spending money and not getting a return.
Now, I wanted to switch gears and talk about another related issue about the magnets that we have in state policy that attract illegal aliens to come across the border, all the welfare benefits, those kinds of things. One of the things you've taken aim at, it's a issue that's addressed in the state Republican platform and an issue that Republicans have been very concerned about over the last few years. Sure. Basically, we're giving in-state subsidized tuition to illegal aliens, a benefit that we don't give to other U.S. citizens, but we right. give this to illegal aliens who are present in the state. And it's been interesting. You've got this bill on file, and these, I think Michael Bloomberg and some leftist groups are out saying, oh, no, this is the worst idea ever. They're, you know, they're trying yep. to attack it. Tell us a little bit about that effort and why you're working on that, and maybe we can talk a little bit about some of the opposition there.
Okay, great. Well, that bill is really a residency bill. You know, there are requirements to be a resident of Texas and to be a citizen of the United States, okay? And if you have residency in Texas and you're a United States citizen, then you get in-state tuition. If you're not living in Texas, then you don't get the in-state. Well, there is a special carve-out for those that have gone to school for over 3 years, high school, and a few other things, and they will be considered a resident, a legal resident when it comes to in-state tuition. So we're just taking, you know, redefining that a resident is a resident no matter who you are. You know, everyone's got the same rules. But that would also mean you don't get in-state tuition. So that's where the in-state tuition part comes. But the point is, these other groups that are saying it's going to cost, you know, it's going to be a cost to the state of Texas and we're going to lose economic benefit. Well, it's not a zero-sum game. If those discounts don't go to illegals, then those discounts can go to legal Texas citizens who are citizens of the United States.
Yeah, that's right. These people are taking up positions at the universities that would otherwise be going to Texas students who wanted to go to these colleges. Or alternatively, they're taking up spots that could be going to a kid from Louisiana or Oklahoma or Michigan or Wisconsin. You know, these folks are wanting to come to Texas, and you're going, okay, well, if we give that spot to somebody who can't legally be a resident here, can't legally work here, and invest state tax dollars in educating those people, that's better than giving those benefits to somebody from out of the state who can move here, can work here, can stay legally here. I mean, that's nuts. I mean, that's farcical.
I know, but that's the only argument they have. And that's the whole point. They have no argument, but the problem is they have the press, and they have the that noise, and a lot of people are afraid to be called, you know, a racist or someone that's discriminating. And it has nothing to do with discrimination. It has to do with the law.
Yeah,
and you want to change the law, then let's change the law. But as of right now, the more we allow people to break the law and say it's okay, the more laws that can be broken. And the whole society crumbles.
And I really think the president has done a great job over the last, particularly over the last several months, pointing out the humanitarian crisis down at the border. And these policies really go hand in hand, where we say, okay, you know, once you're here, you're here, and we're really not going to deport you. We're not going to give you all these benefits and everything else. So go through the desert. You know, go have the coyotes smuggle you through the desert, and, you know, a third of the women raped, and, you know, children trafficked, and, you know, people dying, and all the horrible things that go on with our awful illegal immigration system.
Right.
Oh, just do that, because there's an incentive. At the end of it, we'll give you all that's these benefits. I mean, that's really perverse and contrary to the rule of law. So we're running out of time. I wanted to get a little update. We've had you on before to talk about your efforts to preserve the Alamo, and I know that there's a little progress on that. So listeners may be interested in some Alamo news. Tell us what's going on with that real quick, just so folks want to get involved. They know what's going on.
Well, we know that the state of Texas feels the Alamo is the shrine of our state, of our independence. And it's been a shame what's happened with the signing of a long-term lease, the signing of this new Alamo plan, which will forever change what happens at the Alamo complex, especially on the footprint, the battlefield. And but, you know, it's all been signed, sealed, and delivered by George P. Commissioner Bush and the city of San Antonio mayor. So the only way, and this was all done when we were not in legislature, when the legislature wasn't meeting, so the legislators really don't know what's going on. And so there's been a lot of misinformation, and the people of Texas have spoken clearly on polls and everything else. They are not in favor of moving the cenotaph and changing the emphasis from the Battle of the Alamo.
Yeah, so this is the memorial for the Alamo defenders that's in front of the Alamo structure. It's built in 1936 on the centennial, 100 years after the battle. And there's been a movement by Land Commissioner George P. Bush to move this structure elsewhere. At one point, very far away from the site. Now I think the current plan is to move it off of the battlefield, adjacent to the site. You've got a bill to preserve the site and ensure that they can't move it.
That's correct. And I mean, it's going to be moved 500 feet away into the free speech area. And you know, it's just there is no reason whatsoever to take the defenders off the battlefield where they died. And it's just a travesty on what they're doing. So I called for hearings since my committee, Land and Resource Management, we oversee the GLO, the agency. And so I've called for hearings on March 5th, the day before the celebration or the day of the Alamo, March 6th, the day the battle was fought. So March 5th at 8 o'clock in the morning, we're actually going to have a hearing. And we're going to have the city of San Antonio and Commissioner Bush to answer questions on why they're moving the cenotaph and some of the things that most people don't know about the Alamo plan that was signed by Commissioner Bush and Mayor Nirenberg.
There's an opportunity for listeners who care about that issue, and I think I would hope every listener cares about the issue, certainly.
Yes.
But who care enough to want to be involved, there's a hearing in Austin March 5th, the day before the battle in Austin, 8 a.m. Tell listeners real quick, we're running out of time, tell folks how can they connect with your office, how can they learn more about these efforts that you're working on if they want to get involved?
Well, sure. Of course, you can call the Capitol for my office, but my website is Kyle Biederman, KyleBiederman.com, KyleBiederman.com, and everything's right there to get in touch with us. And we have a lot of this information on the website, but this is it. We have one more chance for the legislature to act on the Alamo, and this is it. After this, your kids and grandkids will never see the same thing again at the Alamo, and there'll never be the emphasis of the battle. There'll be a 10,000 years of history on the battlefield versus the battle, and we just can't allow that to happen, and I need your help. So let your representatives know that this is a very important issue to you, and for having them look into it or asking if they need more information. If you need to pass Bill HB 1836.
That's a great number, House Bill 1836. Thank you, Representative Biederman, for joining us. Thank you for the work you do in Austin.
Well, thank you too, Tony. Thank you for your help and all the things you do, and God bless you.
What are you doing Sunday evening? With the Texas legislative session back in full swing, we're spending our Sundays making sure you are staying informed with Sunday Scorecard, a product of Texas Scorecard TV. Catch the Texas Scorecard team and guests every Sunday at 7:30 p.m. live on the Empower Texans Facebook page to hear the latest news from Austin, D.C., or even your local city governments. That's Sunday Scorecard, live, Sundays at 7:30 p.m. throughout the legislative session. You can find show archives and more information at texasscorecard.com. Join the conversation this Sunday evening.
We often hear legislators complain about so-called unfunded mandates, but it seems even those who complain about them have an addiction to them. Carrie Cheshire explains more in this week's commentary.
For years, Texans have heard state lawmakers campaign on cutting regulations and ending governmental mandates. But each time they arrive in Austin, they begin singing a different tune. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Carrie Cheshire, Vice President of Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. Both Republicans and Democrats in and out of office decry the mountain of mandates pushed on the state by the federal government, and those pushed down from the state to the local governments. But the ones who get elected to office always seem to think that while that's true in the general sense, this one little mandate sure actually makes a lot of sense. It's like the individual who hates Congress but thinks that their congressman is a pretty good guy, and the result is the same. There's a death by a thousand cuts, a scenario where there are more often exceptions to a particular case than instances of it. And such is the case with Texas. Despite claiming that they'll fight regulations on local governments, each year lawmakers in both parties propose more and more government control. Looking at just the first dozen bills or so filed, there's a large number that would impose additional requirements on Texas teachers, administrators, and school boards. Here are just a few of them. House Bill 65 by State Representative Eric Johnson, a Democrat from Dallas, would require school districts report demographic data related to suspended students to the Texas Education Agency. House Bill 76 by State Representative Dan Huberty, a Republican from Kingwood, would require public school students obtain an electrocardiogram before being allowed to participate in UIL activities. And House Bill 116 by State Representative Mary Gonzalez, a Democrat from El Paso, amends the Texas Education Code to require more training for teachers and administrators on educating students with disabilities. House Bill 128 by State Representative Gina Hinojosa, a Democrat from Austin, requires school districts to provide parents with a physical copy of their fitness assessment results instead of just letting them know that it's available. While the wisdom and cost of implementing these various items of legislation varies, lawmakers should tread carefully before applying more mandates to public schools, or any government entity for that matter. School boards, administrators, and teachers are right in their frustration with the continued imposition of unnecessary and costly mandates on schools. Where they often err is their push for them to be fully funded by the state. Ultimately, all tax revenue collected by government comes from the same source, the taxpayer, and Texas taxpayers will be forced to shoulder the burden of any additional government expenditure, no matter how merit-worthy or silly it might be. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Carrie Cheshire.
Well, that's all I've got for this week. If you're catching the show on the radio or on the website, just know we have a podcast, so you can never miss a program. You can subscribe to that on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Spotify. If you're already subscribed there, go on and give us a 5-star review. That helps other listeners find us because we have news that taxpayers need to know. Thanks for listening, and come back next week.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.